You're listening to The Alex Jones Show. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
All right, welcome back, folks. Welcome back. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'll be with you for the rest of this segment. I got a lot of videos to go to. We'll get to those here. And then Gavin McGinnis will be taking over for me, hosting the rest of The Alex Jones Show. And then Jason Burmis will be handling the war room. So you know it's going to be an information-packed episode today. He's always awesome and brings up stuff that nobody else talks about. We talk about sort of the most popular stuff quite a bit. We try to bring you stuff that you aren't hearing anywhere else as well. But it's it takes a certain skill set to do what Jason Burmis does. So stay tuned for him in the war room. Apparently in this press conference, which was a little odd. Again, Trump is making excuses for the war in Iran and saying that we already won, et cetera, et cetera. He's also there, I guess, with a DoorDash driver to promote no tax on tips, which was kind of neat. He's like asking the DoorDash driver her opinion on things. She's like, I don't, it's fine. He's like, what do you think about men and women's sports? And she's like, I'm here to deliver the McDonald's, sir. Please don't ask me to get involved in a hot button political firestorm. Very fun. It's very, very funny stuff. But he was asked, he responded to a question about his post on Truth Social where he is depicting himself as Jesus. A little odd. A little bit of a strange way to present yourself when you have faithful Christians as your base. But apparently he responded. He said it was a miscommunication, just one big accident. Let's see what Donald Trump has to say about his rather blasphemous post this morning. Let's watch.
Did you post that picture of yourself depicted as Jesus Christ?
Well, it wasn't depicted. It was me. I did post it, and I thought it was me as a doctor and had to do with Red Cross as a Red Cross worker there, which we support. And only the fake news could come up with that one. So I just heard about it. And I said, how did they come up with that? It's supposed to be me as a doctor making people better. And I do make people better. I make people a lot better. As an example, the 11,000, I understand your husband's going through treatment.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
He's going through some very serious cancer treatment. So
yes, sir.
This goes a long way.
Yes, sir. It sure does.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. Debatably might be worse. That might be. Does he really think that's a doctor? Let's blow up the picture full screen. Does this look like a doctor to anybody? Have you ever been to a doctor like this? Maybe Trump goes to a different doctor than I go to. I've never been to a doctor that treats me with light that he holds in his hand. That is a different kind of doctor, I guess. He's like, I'm a doctor. You know when you go to the doctor and they put the healing light of God on your forehead? Remember, you know, when you go to the doctor and they're holding the disembodied pure light of God in their hands? You know, the doctor. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I've never been to a doctor like that personally. And he's like, I don't know. Only the fake news could come up with this. No, literally everybody knows what this image is. What are you talking about? I don't know. It's a fine excuse, I guess. He's like, oh, look, I'm a doctor. I'm a doctor healing the sick. Okay, if you say so. I don't believe him. I don't believe him, actually. But okay, that's fine. So anyway, we'll keep moving. Like, this is the thing. It's like, you hear the guy talk. I mean, we went through 4 years of Joe Biden. The man was incapable of saying a three-syllable word. It was horrifying, to be honest with you. Every day we would have a new clip of Joe Biden literally getting lost on a 10-foot walk. Y'all remember those videos? Like the Secret Service have to like pop out of the bushes and be like, the back door's that way. And he's like, wandering out. I mean, it was crazy. So it's like, it's obviously not there. We're obviously not at the point where Donald Trump, his brain is broken, right? It's not, obviously. You see him talk, he makes sense, he's thoughtful, he's smart. Like, but that's the crazy thing is then he does stuff like this and it's like, there's an incongruity here. He seems sharp, he seems with it, he seems perfectly capable of handling business. And then he's like, I thought that was a picture of me as a doctor. And it's like, well, then what the hell is going on? Then what is actually going on in your brain? Because that is a crazy thing to think. That's crazy. So there's some weird going on. I can't exactly put my finger on it. But he seems perfectly cogent and intelligent, and he's making the most insane mistakes anybody's ever made. So there's something missing here. And we're just trying to figure out what that is. The thing is, though, this isn't just about America. It's about the whole world. And the whole world is suffering the consequences of the Iran war. And the closing of the Strait of Hormuz obviously doesn't nearly affect America as much as it does other people. But they seem to not be taking our side of this conflict. They seem to recognize that they were doing fine before America and Israel started this war. It wasn't Iran that started this war. Iran was working with them. Iran was negotiating. You know, the UK knows this directly. And again, this might be one of the reasons they're not going along with this. Like maybe from the UK perspective, if everything the Trump administration was saying is true, maybe they'd go along with it. But they actually had people in the negotiations. So they know for absolute certain that Iran was offering to stop enrichment. They were offering to give up their nuclear program. This is from the official British attaché who was in person witnessing the negotiations. So it's kind of a harder sell to say, well, no, look, these guys could have had a diplomatic solution. They could have never launched this war. It was totally unnecessary. They did it on purpose. They did it by choice. And now we're suffering the consequences. We're not about to go help them. We're not about to go, you know, solve their problems for them. You know, maybe it'd be different if they weren't there in the negotiations. If they believed, well, Iran was being intractable, they tried their best, but war was inevitable. Well, yeah, maybe they'd have a different perspective, but they know the truth. They know that this whole war is totally unnecessary, totally ill-advised, totally stupid from the beginning. So why would they put their own people at risk for this? U.S. Security Advisor attended U.S.-Iran talks and judge deal was within reach. So this is the problem. When you play these deceptive games, people know and they don't trust you and they don't want to help you. This is the problem with all of this. Trump said other countries would help blockade Iran. So far, no takers. No takers. Anybody want to get involved in an ill-advised, totally destructive war that's impossible to win? Anybody? Any takers? Does anybody want to get involved in trying to solve the problem that we created with this war we never needed to launch and don't want to be in anymore? You want to join? You want to join us here in the pool? Of course Israel's involved. Of course Israel's the one doing it to us. We're one in the same. Remember, we're the big brother and they're the little brother with the chain around our neck, yanking it constantly. President Trump's announcement of a complete U.S. blockade was his latest effort to pressure Iran to negotiate after direct talks over the weekend did not yield an agreement. So again, you know, just the inconsistency of Donald Trump saying, you know, they blocked the Strait of Hormuz and they're basically blackmailing the whole world. So now I'm blackmailing the whole world. Now I'm putting the gun to the head of the European economies and saying, do what I say. It's like, okay, if it's so bad that Iran is blackmailing the world, you're now joining them? This doesn't make any sense. The messaging is insane. It's just nonsense. Hormuz blockade, Europe mobilizing against the U.S., not the Iran regime. That's the headline here. When President Trump announced on Truth Social that he wanted the U.S. needed help from Europe, Europe refused. And basically said, no, we're not helping America do this. In fact, we blame America for this. When President Trump announced on Truth Social that the U.S. Navy would blockade any and all ships trying to enter, leave, or leave the Strait of Hormuz, he also instructed the Navy to interdict vessels that had paid tolls to Iran and to destroy mines Iran placed in the waterway. CENTCOM subsequently clarified the actual scope. The blockade applies to vessels entering or departing Iranian ports and coastal areas and does not affect ships transiting the strait to and from non-Iranian ports. The blockade is therefore a naval embargo on the Iranian trade, not a closure of the strait to international shipping generally. But again, it's the messaging is so just inconsistent and vague. It's just leading everybody towards the belief that they got to either stay out for their own sake or, you know, join Iran basically just to put a stop to this because it's so obvious where the aggression is coming from. But then, and for a long time, we've heard the governments of Germany, the governments of England, basically ever since the Ukraine war started, the European elite have been salivating at the idea that they could just send huge portions of their young male populations into the meat grinder. Like right now, they're slowly but surely grinding down the European civilization through the importation of hostile foreigners, many of whom are Muslim, as well as the free speech restrictions and political machinations that leave anybody who actually is a European patriot and wants the best for their country totally incapable of gaining any power whatsoever. So it's a slow process of censorship and crushing the economic potential by shutting down power plants and but it's slow, but it's effective, and they're destroying Europe that way. World War III takes everything that they're already doing and shoves it to turbo speed, goes to warp speed immediately. You're killing off the European people through mass migration? Send them as infantry against tanks instead. It's just so much quicker, so much more efficient. Just literally grind them into meat, and that way you don't even have to worry about them resisting your program. If you want censorship and surveillance, well, hell, being at war is the best excuse you could possibly have. Then you get to, it's not, they're not just fake news or hate speech. They're putting forward enemy propaganda and are therefore traitors and can be dealt with harshly. Everything they're already doing only gets maximized. So for years, they've been saying, oh, you got to get ready. Ooh, we're going to do the draft. We're about to go to war. We got to build up our, you know, domestic forces so that we can defeat Russia. Of course, the difficult part about this is that there's something like, well, there's several million Syrians in Germany right now that Syria themselves say we don't want them back because we consider them an asset diplomatically and geopolitically. So they have a literal army waiting in Germany to take over should the German government ship all the young men overseas. It is literally a program of genocide. This should be obvious, and it has been for years, but it's taken on a new tenor, and it's taken on a new character in my mind, because you suddenly have the leaders of all of these European and Anglo-diaspora governments coming out and saying exactly the same thing, and that is that war as it has been during the Cold War for the last 50 years or so, it's changing. We're going back to a more conventional style of warfare. So let's go to first clip number 8 here. This is Canada's defense chief saying the world has changed and we got to get ready for large-scale conflicts. Let's watch.
We need to understand that, like, post-Cold War, we were asked to do different types of missions. So militaries equip and structure themselves to respond to specific types of missions. So we were most of the time asked to do missions in an expeditionary fashion, in a very specific theater of operation, within limited objectives. So then you organize, structure, equip yourself to be to deliver this type of mission. But the world has changed, as you mentioned, and we live it on a daily basis. We're now looking at the Ukraine's lessons learned, Russian behavior, and other of their collaborators. So we have to get ready for large-scale conflicts, more conventional. So we need a different military to do that and different capabilities.
Okay, so that's the talking point that's gone out. That's the New World Order manufactured consent term that they're pushing forward. Is the world has changed. Now remember, to be a conspiracy theorist and to wake up basically from to escape Plato's cave, all you really have to understand is things don't just happen. The world didn't just change, right? No, these people have policies that they're putting in place. The world changes in accordance to the policy, and then they look around and act like this just happened, just all of a sudden. So essentially, during the Cold War, especially because of the threat of nuclear weapons, we just stopped doing conventional war because it basically became, you know, with mutually assured destruction, it was impossible for America to face off with Russia, face off with the Soviet Union in a clash of armies like World War II or World War I, because it would inevitably get to the nuclear solution, and that just changed the whole face of warfare. And so everything became proxy wars. That's why you had Vietnam. That's why you had Korea. That's why you had the Middle East wars. That's why you had a bunch of manipulation in Africa. And that's actually what the term third world means, right? First world was the West. Second world was communism. Third world was all of those countries not aligned one way or the other, that there was constant, you know, battle over all throughout Africa. This was the case where you had, anyway. So that's what war has been like for a while, and we're still in that kind of mode of operation. Now, the ultimate goal of the globalists, and they always say that the point of globalism is to end war, and what they mean is an end to that type of conflict, where one nation, another nation have a problem, they fight, one wins, they get a peace agreement, they make a deal, the war ends. That's over. That's what they don't want anymore. What they want now is continual warfare by the system against anybody outside of the system. That's why they're not trying to defeat Iran conventionally and militarily and replace them with a new regime. They just want an open air thunderdome where they can just wage endless war forever on this playground of death. Like, that's what Syria is. That's what Libya is. That's the intention. That's the design. Okay, so that's actually the future of warfare. But again, this talking point has apparently gone out. We just heard from the Canadian lady. Now we can hear from Sir Richard Knightington, a UK military man, about how we need to get ready for conventional large-scale war, exactly what the Canadian leader said. Let's watch.
I think the transition to conflict, transition to war, as it's described, NATO describes it, transition to conflict, has a military component to it, but also has a civilian component to it. The SDR talked about how we protect our critical national infrastructure, and we also talk about how we need to build that resilience into the systems as we renew them. I talked before Christmas of the need that when we think about renewing our water infrastructure or our electricity or our transport infrastructure, to think about the threat of action from an adversary that is above the threshold of war, so it's not just a hybrid threat, and think about how we build in that resilience as we renew it. And that requires to make some different choices and different priorities. And that work that the Cabinet Office is doing across the whole of government is something I really welcome.
So again, there is Sir Richard Knightington saying that the United Kingdom is preparing for basically a war economy, just like Trump announced that America would be a war economy. Like, these things don't, again, just happen. These aren't just coincidences that all of these various, you know, English-speaking nations are all echoing the same sentiment that, yeah, during the Cold War, there were little, you know, flare-ups. You'd send in people to achieve a goal. But now we're getting back to the big, big conflict. This is all just in service of a great World War III conflict where they can have Russians and Europeans killing each other, Americans and Iranians killing each other, Chinese and Indians killing each other. And we'll just have a massive die-off. We'll just kill all of the people that, you know, would resist the New World Order. And what we'll be left with is just a destroyed and traumatized dregs of, you know, the survivors that can all be easily corralled into cities and given a Mark of the Beast, you know, digital ID. And that'll be that. That's what they're moving towards. Everything is going into place to build that. And the Iran war is a key feature of this ultimate plan. Now, they're running into trouble because the European people are getting fed up and finally standing up against the deliberate destruction of the native population by the authorities there. Let's go to clip 16. Last week, the Irish government set the army on a small group of workers. This week, the people are shutting down the Irish economy in protest. So Ireland has had a lot of protests recently because they have been targeted for total destruction with massive, unbelievably huge and sophisticated colonies being built in Ireland, literal barracks filled with foreign men being shipped in. And again, you know, whether this has anything to do with Ireland's traditional and historic opposition to Israel, just like how Spain recently announced their opposition to Israel. Israel said Spain is now our enemy. And then 2 days later, Spain received an influx of hundreds of thousands of Africans. Very coincidental. I don't think these things are distinct and separate. I think they're actually deeply intertwined. But Irish has had problems. The Irish have had problems with their government for a while. And the latest is the fuel restrictions because of the Iran war. And then this is what we're seeing in response is endless lines of trucks and farming equipment being used to block roads and shut down the economy in protests. And the Irish army has been deployed to deal with this. And the Irish people are standing up. And we can go, well, we can listen to what this guy says. But essentially, you know, Ireland is standing up against this. And, you know, some Irish police are calling in sick because they don't want to be the ones to go crush the protest because they just know that that's being a traitor. And look, the Irish are getting pretty intense. Some of the fuel stations are refusing to sell fuel to Irish police. And so there's videos of police like pushing the cop cars because they've run out of gas and nobody will sell them gas. So like Ireland is really pushing back against this. But the Irish elite were prepared for this. They knew this was going to happen, and so they've done some things to get ready for it. One of the things they did, we reported on at the time that they did it, which is that the Irish Garda, their version of the FBI, the National Police of Ireland, who you see, you know, shutting down these protests, actually went to Pakistan and were advertising on Pakistani television in Pashtun or whatever the Pakistani language is, and recruiting from Pakistan people to go to Ireland and become the police. So let's go to clip number 12 here, Irish Garda police advertising, trying to recruit directly from Pakistan. Let's watch.
Really want to get the message out there amongst the Pakistan community, the Muslim community, and the broader community of the different nationalities that make up Ireland, that we want to see represented in our national police force and making a real difference. So please put in that application.
अस्सलाम वालेकुम मेरा नाम हफ्सा हुसैन है मैं पीयूसी आयरलैंड की मीडिया एडवाइजर हूं आयरलैंड में बसने वाले ओवरसीज पाकिस्तानियों के लिए बहुत अच्छी खबर है कि गार्डा शेखाना ने अपनी रिक्रूटमेंट जो है वो दोबारा से खोली है
दिस इज दिस इज द आयरिश गार्डे एक्टिवली रिक्रूटिंग डायरेक्टली फ्रॉम पाकिस्तान अनदर वे टू पुट दिस वुड बी द आयरिश एलीट आर इंपोर्टिंग अ फॉरेन आर्मी टू क्रश एंड ऑप्रेस द नेटिव्स दैट्स व्हाट्स एक्चुअली हैपनिंग हियर द आयरिश एलीट are importing and arming an army of Pakistani Muslims because they know that they'll be happy to crush the Irish. You know, the average Irishman becomes a police officer. He's given instructions. Hey, those people who are protesting the importation of, 1,000 adult Muslim men into their community of 500, go kick the women in the stomach and push them out of the road. And an Irish guy will go, what? No. What are you talking about? A Pakistani guy, you're telling him, hey, go crush the natives so that your people can move in. And he's like, great, I'll do that. That's the plan. They're doing it. That's the operation. That video is from like 2024. So they've been recruiting for years directly from hostile foreign nations so that they can arm those people, put them in uniform, and send them out to oppress the Irish. People are talking about an Irish civil war. You're already at war. Your elite is already at war. The British elite are already at war with the British people. The German elite are already at war with the German people. It's time the people of Europe recognize this and stand up against it. They've thrown down the gauntlet. The elite have declared this war. It has to be us that finishes it. That's going to be it for me. Gavin McGinnis takes over on the other side of a quick commercial break. Please do support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. It's the only way that we get your support and the only way that we can talk about this incredibly important world-ending information. if we don't act.
We have it all. Ultramethylene Blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The Turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, pro cardiovascular, ultimate life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at theultramethylenestore.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for auto ship. Cancel anytime. And you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Bitly to do this. They were a little skeptical because they like to give you good deals, but not this good because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information's hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.